prove that she still could, that it was not too late. After that, at last, she would apply to medical school, only 8 years later than planned. While the children were at school, she drove an hour to the community college outside Toledo and enrolled in organic chemistry, advanced statistics, anatomy, everything she'd planned for her last semesters. The next day, she made the drive again and found a furnished efficiency near the campus, signing a lease for the 1st of May. 2 weeks away. Every night when she was alone, she read the cookbook again, steeling herself with her mother's small and lonely life. "You don't want this," she reminded herself. "There will be more to your life than this." Lydia and Nath would be fine, she told herself again and again. She would not let herself think otherwise. James would be there. Look how they had managed while she was in Virginia. It was still possible. In the quiet dark, she packed her old college textbooks into cartons and tucked them in the attic, ready to go. As May approached, she cooked lavish meal after lavish meal. Swedish meatballs, beef stroganoff, chicken a la king. Everything James and the children liked best. Everything from scratch, just as her mother had taught her. She baked a pink birthday cake for Lydia and let her eat as much as she wanted. On the 1st of May, after Sunday dinner, she sealed leftovers in Tupperware and put them in the freezer. She baked batch after batch of cookies. "It's like you're preparing for a famine," James said, laughing. And Marilyn smiled back, a fake smile, the same one she had given to her mother all those years. You lifted the corners of your mouth toward your ears. You kept your lips closed. It was amazing how no one could tell. That night, in bed, she wrapped her arms around James, kissed the side of his neck, undressed him slowly, as she had when they were younger. She tried to memorize the curve of his back and the hollow at the base of his spine, as if he were a landscape she would never see again. Beginning to cry, silently at first, and then, as their bodies collided again and again, more fiercely. "What is it?" James whispered, stroking her cheek. "What's wrong?" Marilyn shook her head, and he pulled her close, their bodies sticky and damp. "It's okay," he said, kissing her forehead. "Everything will be better tomorrow." In the morning, Marilyn burrowed beneath the covers, listening to James dress. The zip as he fastened his trousers, the clink as he buckled his belt. Even with her eyes closed, she could see him straightening his collar, smoothing the cowlick in his hair, which still, after all these years, made him look a bit like a schoolboy. She kept them closed when he came to kiss her goodbye, because if she saw him, she knew the tears would come again. At the bus stop, later that morning, she knelt on the sidewalk and kissed Nath and Lydia each on the cheek, not daring to look into their eyes. "Be good," she told them. "Behave. I love you." After the bus had disappeared around the curve of the lake, she visited her daughter's room, then her son's. From Lydia's dresser, she took a single barrette, cherry-colored bakelite with a white flower, one of a pair she seldom wore. From the cigar box beneath Nath's bed, she took a marble, not his favorite, the cobalt with white specks like stars, but one of the little dark ones, the ones he called oilies. From the inside of James's overcoat, the old one he'd worn in her college days, she snipped the spare button from the underside of the lapel. A tiny token from each, tucked into the pocket of her dress. A gesture that would resurface in her youngest child years later, though Marilyn would never mention this small theft to Hannah, or to anyone. Not something treasured and loved, something they might miss but would not grieve. No need to tear another hole, even a pinprick in their lives. Then Marilyn took her boxes from their hiding place in the attic and sat down to write James a note. But how did you write something like this? It seemed wrong to write to him on her stationery as if he were a stranger. More wrong still to write it on the scratch pad in the kitchen, as if it were no more important than a grocery list. At last, she pulled a blank sheet from the typewriter and sat down at her vanity with a pen. I realize that I am not happy with the life I lead. I always had one kind of life in mind, and things have turned out very differently. Marilyn took a deep, ragged breath. I have kept all these feelings inside me for a long time. But now, after being in my mother's house again, I think of her and realize I cannot put them aside any longer. I know you'll be fine without me. She paused, trying to convince herself this was true. I hope you can understand why I have to leave. I hope you can forgive me. For a long time, Marilyn sat, ballpoint in hand, unsure how to finish. In the end, she tore up the note and tossed the shreds into the waste paper basket. Better, she decided, just to go. To disappear from their lives as if she had never been there. To Nath and Lydia, who that afternoon found themselves unmet at the bus stop, who let themselves into an unlocked and empty house. That was exactly how it seemed. Their father, when he came home 2 hours later to find his children huddled on the front steps, as if they were afraid to be in the house alone, kept asking questions. "What do you mean, gone?" he asked Nath, who could only repeat, "Gone," the only word he could find. Lydia, meanwhile, said nothing at all during the confused rest of the evening, in which their father called the police and then all the neighbors, but forgot about dinner and bedtime, as the policeman took note after note until she and Nath fell asleep on the living room floor. She awoke in the middle of the night in her own bed, where her father had deposited her, shoes still on, and felt for the diary her mother had given her at Christmas. At last something important had occurred, something that she ought to write down. But she did not know how to explain what had happened, how everything had changed in just one day, how someone she loved so dearly could be there one minute, and the next minute, gone. 5. Hannah knows nothing about that summer, of her mother's long-ago disappearance. For as long as she's been alive, the family has never spoken of it, and even if they had, it would have changed nothing. She is furious with her sister for vanishing, bewildered that Lydia would leave them all behind. Knowing would only have made her more furious, more bewildered. How could you, she would have thought, when you knew what it was like? As it is, imagining her sister sinking into the lake, all she can think now is, how? And what was it like? Tonight she will find out. Again, it is 2 a.m. by her glow-in-the-dark clock. All night she has lain patiently, watching the numbers tick by. Today, June 1st, should have been her last day of school. Tomorrow, Nath was supposed to walk across the stage in his blue robe and mortarboard and collect his diploma. But they're not going to Nath's commencement. Neither of them has gone back to school since. Her mind silences the thought. She takes the squeaky sixth stair on her toes. She skips the middle rosette in the front hall carpet and the creaky floorboard beneath, landing cat-soft just at the door. Although upstairs Marilyn and James and Nath all lie awake, searching for sleep, no one hears. Hannah's body knows all the secrets of silence. In the dark, her fingers slide back the bolt, then grasp the safety chain and unfasten it without rattling. This last is a new trick. Before the funeral, there was no chain. She's been practicing this for 3 weeks now, toying with the lock whenever her mother wasn't looking. Now Hannah oozes her body around the door and steps barefoot onto the lawn, where Lydia must have been on her last night alive. Overhead, the moon hovers behind tree branches, and the yard and the walkway and the other houses slowly appear out of the grainy dark. This is what her sister would have seen that night. Glints of moonlight reflected in Mrs. Allen's window panes. The mailboxes all leaning slightly away. The faint glimmer of the street lamp on the corner, where the main road loops around the lake. At the edge of the lawn, Hannah stops, toes on the sidewalk, heels still on the grass, and pictures that thin figure marching into the shadows. She had not looked afraid. So Hannah heads straight down the middle of the road, too, where the yellow line would be if their street were busy enough to need one. Through the darkened windows, the pale linings of curtains glow. There are no lights anywhere on their street, except for Mrs. Allen's front door light, which she leaves on all the time, even during the day. When Hannah was younger, she had thought adults stayed up late every night, until 2 or 3, perhaps. She adds this to the list of things she's learned are untrue. At the corner, she stops, but sees only darkness both ways. No cars. Her eyes are used to the dark now, and she darts across the main road and onto the grassy bank of the lake. But she still can't see it. Only the slope of the ground tells her that she's getting close. She passes a clump of birches, all holding their stiff arms above their heads, as if in surrender. Then, suddenly, her toes find the water. Below the low thrum of a high-up airplane, she hears it. A faint lapping against her ankles, soft as the sound of her own tongue in her mouth. If she looks very hard, she can see a faint shimmer, like silver tulle. Except for that, she would not have known that this was water. "A beautiful location," the realtor had told James and Marilyn when they had first moved to Middlewood. Hannah has heard this story many times. 5 minutes to the grocery store and the bank, and think of it, the lake practically at your doorstep. He had glanced at Marilyn's rounded belly. "You and the kiddos can swim all summer, like having your own private beach." James, charmed, had agreed. All her life, Hannah has loved this lake. Now it is a new place. The dock, smoothed by years of use, is the same silvery gray by moonlight that it is in the day. At the end, one small lamp, set on a post, stretches its light over a thin circle of the water. She will set out in the boat, as Lydia must have. She will row to the middle of the lake, where her sister somehow ended up, and peer down into the water. Maybe then she'll understand. But the boat is gone. The city, belatedly cautious, has taken it away. Hannah sinks back onto her heels and imagines her sister kneeling to unknot the rope, then pushing the boat away from the shore, so far out you couldn't tell the water from the darkness around it. At last, she lies down on the dock, rocking herself gently, looking up into the night sky. It is as close to her sister's last night as she can get. If this were another summer, the lake would still be a lovely place. Nath and Lydia would don swimsuits and spread towels across the grass. Lydia, gleaming with baby oil, would stretch out in the sun. If Hannah were very lucky, she would be allowed to rub a squirt of oil on her own arms, to retie the strings of Lydia's bikini after she had tanned her back. Nath would cannonball off the dock, spraying a fine mist that would bead up on their skin like pearls. On the very best days, though those were very, very rare, their parents would come too. Their father would practice his breaststroke and his Australian crawl, and if he was in a good mood, he'd take Hannah out over her head, steadying her as she kicked. Their mother, shaded by a huge sun hat, would look up from her New Yorker when Hannah returned to the towel and let her curl quietly against her shoulder to peep at the cartoons. These things happened only at the lake. They won't go to the lake this summer at all. They will never go again. She knows without having to ask. Her father has spent the past 3 weeks in his office, although the university had offered to have someone else finish out the term. Her mother has spent hours and hours in Lydia's room, looking and looking at everything, but touching nothing. Nath roams the house like a caged beast, opening cupboards and shutting them, picking up one book after another, then tossing them down again. Anna doesn't say a word. These are the new rules, which no one has outlined, but which she already knows. Don't talk about Lydia. Don't talk about the lake. Don't ask questions. She lies still for a long time, picturing her sister on the lake bed. Her face would point straight up, like this, studying the underside of the water. Her arms would stretch out, like this, as if she were embracing the whole world. She would listen and listen, waiting for them to come and find her. "We didn't know," Hannah thinks. "We would have come." It doesn't help. She still doesn't understand. Back home, Hannah tiptoes into Lydia's room and shuts the door. Then she lifts the dust ruffle and pulls out the slim velvet box hidden beneath the bed. Under the tent of Lydia's blanket, she opens the box and pulls out a silver locket. Their father had given it to Lydia for her birthday, but she had tucked it under her bed, letting the velvet grow shaggy with dust. The necklace is broken now. But anyway, Hannah has promised Lydia that she will never put it on, and she does not break promises to people she loves, even if they aren't alive anymore. Instead, she rubs the fine chain between her fingers like a rosary. The bed smells like her sister sleeping, a warm and musky and sharp smell, like a wild animal that emerged only when she was deep in slumber. She can almost feel the imprint of her sister's body in the mattress, wrapping her like a hug. In the morning, when the sunlight comes through the window, she remakes the bed and replaces the locket and returns to her room. Without thinking, she knows she will do this again the next night, and the next, and the next, smoothing the blanket when she wakes, stepping carefully over the scattered shoes and clothes as she makes her way to the door. At breakfast time, Nath comes downstairs to find his parents arguing, and he stops in the hallway just outside the kitchen. "Unlocked all night," his mother is saying, "and you don't even care." It wasn't unlocked. The bolt was on. By the sharp little edges in his father's voice, He can tell this conversation has been going on for some time. Someone could have gotten in. I put that chain on for a reason. Nath tiptoes.